Welcome to episode 155 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live December 10, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Ben and Scott discuss tenant-level services in Office 365, or more broadly, Microsoft 365, and how you need to approach licensing your users for these various services and deploying them to these users. There we go. Perfecto. All right, this is what happens when we don't podcast for, how long has it been? It's probably been about 6 weeks. We've been living off of our Ignite podcasts and ignoring each other while you travel and I travel.
Yeah, it's been great. But at some point, you had to get us back in front of a microphone.
Wait a minute. You just said ignoring me has
not
been great.
Not ignoring you.
I don't know how I feel about this.
Traveling around. I mean, I got to go to some fun places. I was in...
You
DC,
did.
And then I was in Paris, and I went back to Amsterdam for a little bit, and then I was in Dallas, so I've been getting around.
And you took a little bit of a vacation in Paris too, right? It wasn't just work in Paris.
I did, yeah. I wanted some free time to sit at a cafe and just eat some good bread and, you know, take in a bottle or two of wine. And it worked out wonderfully, swimmingly.
Beautiful. I was actually took like, so it wasn't really vacation because I still worked, but I went and saw family for like 12 days and just kind of worked a little bit for week and a half, almost 2 weeks. And it was nice until I got back and had to start working again and realized how much I had kind of put off those 12 days.
Yeah, those like staycation or workcation kind of things. I guess not a staycation because then you're really on vacation, but workcation. Because you and I are both remote workers. And I think one of the beauties of being a remote worker is you do get that flexibility to go someplace else, whether someplace else is maybe the library or the local coffee shop, whatever it happens to be. But there are occasions where your family wants to travel. Like I've done the same thing, even to the point where 1 year they wanted to go to, what's the Disney bias? Disney World. So we went down to Disney World and rented a house, and all day the kids would go out in the parks and I would stay at quote unquote home at like the Airbnb or whatever we had rented and work all day. And then I would go out to the parks at night and do things like that. But you do get all the FOMO things. And then it's hard when, especially around holiday times, when kids are running around trying to figure out how all that comes together and maps back in. So I feel your pain a little bit.
We were staying with my parents and my cousins live across the street from my parents. So there were like 9 kids all 12 and under-ish, I think, 11 and under-ish, all running around. So at times I was like sitting at my parents trying to do a little work with 9 kids chasing each other around the house. Then you just kind of give up. But it is nice to at least stay on top of email, because who wants to come back to 12 weeks of email or 12 days?
No, 12 that's
weeks
just
kill
me.
12 days
declare
of email.
Bankruptcy. You know, control A and delete or archive, whatever it is.
But I did go shopping.
Yeah, I saw that. How's that new MacBook working out for you?
It's supposed to be here this week.
All right, so next week we can talk about it.
Yes. Okay. So we're going down to, I don't think there's anybody that's going to come to my door and steal it. We're going to Jacksonville. Well, nobody will hear this. No, they will hear this right before it gets here. We're going down to Disney Friday and it's supposed to be here Friday. So I either need to convince my family to push off leaving until it gets here or hope it gets here before we leave on Friday.
Yeah, that is a delivery that's definitely going to require a signature.
Yeah, I hope so. FedEx usually does a pretty good job of getting signatures when they're required. I've noticed UPS doesn't always get that required signature. But I also bought some new headphones too, Scott. There were sales on Black Friday.
There were sales. Did you go for the Sonys?
There were sales. I did not. I went for the
700s?
No, I did not. I went for the QCs, the 35s.
Amateur.
Because, I knew you were going to give me grief for this, which is why I waited until we were recording. I was looking at them all, and I'd still be tempted to try the Sonys, but I was actually looking at the impedance because I also use my headphones when we record and plug them into my mixer. And from everything I could find, the impedance on the Sonys was too low because I've had this with certain other headphones, where headphones with low impedance, if you plug them into a soundboard, it just blows them out and it gets all distorted and ugly.
I've never had to plug mine into a soundboard. So I mean, my primary use case for those Bluetooth noise canceling headphones is flying on planes, where, let me tell you, they are just straight up amazing.
See, and I'm not on planes enough that noise canceling is nice, but it wasn't going to be the selling point for me on them. I use them too much for day-to-day stuff that I wanted them to work for everything, which, truth be told, is why I also ended up with a 16-inch MacBook Pro, because we had talked about this too, and I was like, do I wait for the 14-inch and get a smaller one? I'm like, reality is, at this point in time, I don't travel enough that the smaller one matters, and I wanted the bigger one with what is probably going to be a little more power. Again, if they even do a 14-inch, they still... I haven't seen a lot of definitive rumors one way or the other on what the future of the MacBook Pro line looks like.
Nobody has. That's okay. You're not the only one in the dark.
Those were my purchases over Black Friday.
Well...
Now, I definitely have to work, because those combined with vacation will break the bank.
And now the truth comes out. So that's why we're recording today. Got it.
That's why we're recording today. Everyone on your team is unique. So is SkillMeUp.com. Only SkillMeUp provides the bridge from fundamentals to certification paths to advanced skills to accelerate digital transformation with one subscription and five ways to learn. Start your free pilot today and supercharge your IT and Microsoft Azure skills by visiting skillmeup.com/pilot or click the link in the show notes below. So one other thing coming up I wanted to mention, and then we can actually get into our topic, which could be interesting, is the Collab 365 guys have another conference coming up, their GlobalCon 1, that registration is out for now. It's still like 83 days away. It's off in March 6th through 2nd. We'll put a link to it. We might be doing some fun podcast stuff with it. We still need to figure out some of that, but the first 2,000 tickets are free, so go look in the link in the show notes. It's like a five-day virtual conference about SharePoint, Teams, Power Apps, Power Automate, all the power things, all the Office 365 things. So go register and check out that.
So that's going to be GlobalCon 1, right? Collab 365, hashtag GlobalCon 1, 2025 days. That thing,
yes,
man. So that's Mark Jones and crew. But I'm just going to say, like, reading that out, Collab 365, hashtag GlobalCon 1, 2025 days. That is absolutely just like an Amazon description, if I've ever heard one. somebody just trying to cram all the things in there and get them to where they need to be. But yeah, we will absolutely include that in a link to that in the show notes, which can be found at mscloud itpropodcast.com/episode155.
You've locked us in. This is now officially episode 155.
That's my way to make sure that things get to where they need to be.
So what are we going to talk about for episode 155? Are we going to talk or are we going to rant? First, let's clarify.
Well, it's probably going to be a ranty talk. How's that? Is that good enough fallout for you there?
That's good. Well, and this is definitely an interesting topic, because I have had clients end up in this boat, and this is confusing.
So there's lots of confusing things about the cloud. What we're going to talk about is tenant level versus per user entitlements. So effectively, there are things that you would purchase within Microsoft land, particularly within Microsoft 365 or Office 365, that when you activate a feature, that feature actually becomes applicable to the entire tenant, even though you might be looking to pick it up for just one user. So what's going to happen is you're going to turn on a service, and that's considered a tenant level service. And when you purchase it for a user, it's going to be activated in part or in full for all of the users in that tenant. Now, this becomes interesting because although some unlicensed users may technically be able to access that service that you've gone ahead and lit up, a license is actually required for any user that you intend to benefit from that service. So we're going to talk about some tenant level services and features of M365 and O365 and ways that you can think about licensing with maybe targeted or more scoped deployments within some of those features, kind of sort of hopefully. And this is outside of things like 5-to-1 licensing for, or 5-to-1, 1-to-5, whatever it is, for guest users in your tenancy for maybe advanced features like MFA or things like that.
Right. Because this is kind of goofy because, in part, almost all of the services could technically fall into this.
Not really, because...
Okay, so not all of them. Exchange can't. SharePoint can fall into this one in a way.
Well, no, because...
Because you can access it whether you're licensed or not.
Right. That's a... Really what we're usually talking about is things that you might have a per user entitlement control for. So if I think about something like SharePoint on a user by user basis, SharePoint Online, I can go into an individual user in my tenancy and turn on and off a SharePoint license. And now I can do the same thing for guest users in my tenancy as well with SharePoint. Once they're in my Azure Active Directory, I can absolutely come back and have some kind of tweaks and knobs and levers that I can pull
a license
to make that happen. Now, the fact that SharePoint sometimes does and does not respect that license, that's a SharePoint problem. That's not a that's not a tenant level service thing. This would be more something like, well, some things we've talked about. So we've talked about like...
Yeah, pick one off of here.
Let's do advanced threat protection because we did a little bit about that in the past. So that's just a, you know, high level, it's a cloud service. It helps protect your hybrid deployments from multiple types of advanced targeted cyber attacks, maybe monitoring kill chain, insider threat reporting, whatever happens to be. But that is an advanced feature of usually the enterprise mobility and security suite. So think like an EMS, E5, A5, G5 kind of license to go ahead and light those up, or the same equivalent like M365 license. Or Azure Advanced Threat Protection for users can also use Azure ATP as well. But yeah, once you go ahead and turn that feature on, it is going to, you go ahead and you create your first ATP instance. Those features are enabled at the tenant level for all of the users within your Azure Active Directory tenant. So that one becomes a little bit interesting because as a tenant level service, boom, it's just lit up. But technically, Microsoft only provides threat detection capabilities for licensed users. But because it's lit up at the tenant level, you might have something like an F1 user in your tenancy. Technically, they are going to go through that flow and kind of land where they need to land, which is going to be a little bit weird for you.
Right. So in this article, it's nice in that it breaks this down.
I should have mentioned that. We're cheating. There's a big article that lays all this out.
Yes. So we're going to link to this, but under like Azure Advanced Threat Protection, it does break it down and it says which users benefit from the service and it'll give you which licensed users can benefit from it and then how the users benefit from it. So what is the service actually doing for your users? How is it provisioned, deployed? And then how can this be applied only to users in the tenant who are licensed for the service? So kind of like you said, these are all lit up. And what if you don't want them applied to everybody? How do you limit this so you don't have to go buy this for all 6,000 users because it's a tenant level service? But how can you apply this to only those users who you maybe bought the licenses from? And this one's a little confusing. I do remember ATP is one of the options when you go in and assign licenses and apps, if I remember right.
ATP is, but the instance itself, which lives over in Azure ATP, is not. That's it. You light it up, it's on.
It's on.
So in some cases, the thing I think that's interesting about some of this is it really highlights where over time, certain products, whether it's the product teams that are developing them or the ones who are kind of coming up and envisioning what the licensing looks like, they've built these things that aren't actually technically gated, but by licensing, right? Some of it tends to be just a, you're not going to cheat game, or Microsoft might come back and go through a little bit of a true up or something like that with you along the way. So if you're a larger enterprise customer, you've probably got a TAM and you've got a whole account team that you can work with who will help you figure out how and where some of this stuff lays out for you. Or you might want to take a step back and say, hey, we're only going to use features maybe to our detriment, right? Because, you know, we wanted this advanced security thing, but we can't turn it on because it can't be scoped. We're only going to use features that can be scoped along the way. So for something there, let's maybe take like Cloud App Security. That's Microsoft's CASB, their Cloud Access Security Broker solution. So that's another one. Again, you turn it on for one user and it is technically turned on for all of them. But in the case of Cloud App Security, so just MCAS, you can scope those deployments by using scope deployment capabilities that are actually available within Cloud App Security itself. So you can go ahead and dive into then what is called a scoped deployment. So effectively, we're saying we're only going to allow certain users or groups to be monitored within that service or excluded from monitoring within that service, depending on how you decide to configure it. So really kind of your sweet spot for a lot of these tenant level services that get lit up is you're looking for things that hopefully, just to make sure you're kind of within the letter of your licensing, do support scoped deployments of some form or another.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of these definitely take planning. And to your point, that's what I've talked to some clients about too, is clients are like, well, I enabled this and now all my users can use it. And it's, you do. You have to have that conversation and think through, yeah, they can all use it, but they might all not be licensed for it because of how that works at that tenant level. And you do. You either have to go buy them, or if Microsoft ever chooses to do some audit or you need to do that true up, if you're not careful, there's a chance you're going to have to go do a bunch of fixing and adjusting and changing, because all of these two are set different ways. Like you said with Cloud App Security, and that was Office 365 Cloud App Security, Microsoft Cloud App Security is controlled differently than Office 365 Cloud App Security.
MCAS is one type of scope deployment. So Microsoft Cloud App Security, MCAS, versus OCAS, or Office 365 Cloud App Security, which is, yeah, it does support scope deployments, but like you said, in a totally different manner.
Yeah, because your MCAS is more going back to licenses. And then you have another one I was looking at, like Azure Information Protection. Some of the AIP scanner to automatically classify, label, protect files is another one of those that by default, it's tenant level for all users in your tenant. But now this one has like that client that goes and sits on your machines. So for AIP scanner, if you want to apply this only to users, it's registries to be edited to prevent those unlicensed users from running AIP classification or labeling features. So this is another one of those scoped AIP deployments, setting up policies and registries and all of that to limit Azure Information Protection when it comes to that scanner feature.
Yeah. you start to get down in the weeds pretty quickly with a lot of these features and kind of how they come across. And, you know, even if it does support a scoped deployment, does it support a scoped deployment that is going to give you the warm fuzzies, right? Or put you in a place where you feel comfortable deploying that service and you really do feel like you're going to be kind of within the letter of the law or the licensing, however that falls out for you. Because you've purchased a service, and that service, you've agreed to a license agreement along the way. So whether, you know, now it gets kind of weird because, you know, just because Microsoft didn't give you the feature to scope it, whose fault is it when you turn it on or leave it on or misconfigure it?
And that's what I've heard. Some of my clients are like, so Microsoft lights this up for everybody, but then they blame us when we even accidentally or inadvertently use it because we're not aware that it was a tenant level or that it was scoped to everybody. So, yeah, I agree. What I'm curious about, I don't see this in the list. I'm curious on your thoughts, because I would see this as another one of these tenant level services, is your conditional access in Azure AD.
Ah, well, conditional access policies are, those are scope deployments, because they get lit up. You can already include or exclude users and groups from those policies.
So that would be, even though it's a, well, but it is a tenant level feature, right? I would call it tenant level.
It is, but it's one of those that kind of just has built-in scope deployments. I think it's pretty clear.
By who you assign users.
I think it's very clear that it has a scope deployment. For some of these things, I don't think you would ever think about it. Let's say you want to do sign-in reporting, maybe like Azure AD identity protection along the way. So that gives you, you know, your risk policies, go ahead and light up and get them to where they need to be. Most organizations I've seen, and even some I've worked for, like your first inclination isn't immediately to go and scope all your risk policies. Your first inclination is to turn it on and say, holy cow, look at all my users and all these things that are going. Like, you're not going in and saying, well, this is an F1 user, so even though I saw that they were potentially compromised or in a bad place, I'm just going to ignore that one.
Got it.
That's not the way it's going to work.
And I guess that makes sense, because when you are doing conditional access and setting that up, you have to make that conscious decision about which users are getting which policies. And if you do have mixed users, you just have to make sure that at no point in time do you actually set it to apply to all your users.
You know what? Just to make you feel better, what I will do is I will put an issue on this article and say, hey, can we include conditional access?
Conditional access in there. Or you could just go edit it yourself, because it's all in GitHub.
That's not my thing.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. Another one that was, I don't know that I've thought about this one, is the whole data loss prevention in there is one of these two, where DLP gets scoped as a tenant level. And
so data loss prevention,
that one you actually have to go exclude users, because everybody's included by default when you enable a data loss prevention policy.
Yes, so you need to customize the location, right? What is that particular workload that you're going to go against? Am I going against Exchange or SharePoint? What are the included users? And then what are the excluded users as well? So yeah, those are, you got to do the same for Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive for Business. And then of course, because Teams is a little rainbow unicorn thing sitting on the side, that also needs to be configured. So your Teams chat and channel messages, things like that.
Yeah, that one's easy to get a wide mix of too, especially if you create global policies across Exchange and SharePoint, because based on if you're doing E1 or E3, you may have DLP, or if you have some people that just have Exchange licenses, they may or may not have DLP. And then you throw Teams in there. And yeah, data loss prevention is definitely one that, that one's one that would require some planning.
I think all of these require planning, because they drive not just back to the licensing that you have to purchase, but it's additional configuration and operational management for you, right? If I scope a given feature, say to a security group, like I'm running in hybrid mode and I've got a security group on-prem and I'm using that security group to gate access to one of these features because it had to be a scoped deployment and that's what it supported. Well, now I got to go back and remember that anytime I let up a user in the cloud with this license, that I actually need to go all the way back on-prem, add them to the security groups so that they can filter through and get the proper access to that feature that they need. It gets really down in the weeds. I think it's more than just a kind of licensing or a first-time implementation burden. It's ongoing operations within your business as you stand all this stuff up.
I definitely agree. And this is one I think there's a lot of people that tend to just ignore it. Definitely not something to ignore. I didn't realize this article's been out there for so long.
You've got to watch the publish dates on these. So sometimes the publish date was when it was first published to the kind of internal repo. And then as it comes across to the public side. So sometimes there's a little bit of lag on those.
I would say it's not people intentionally ignoring this. It's just maybe ignore isn't a bad word. It's just oblivious to the fact. Because I do have a lot of clients that just don't realize how some of this works, especially when it comes to certain features being lit up and certain licenses and how you have to manage those users to make sure that you're not using features they're not licensed for. And Microsoft does put a lot of that onus on you.
Very much so. I don't think it's unique to a Microsoft thing, right? This happens a lot when you buy products just off the shelf or off the internet or whatever it happens to be.
And it's not even unique to Microsoft and Office 365, because I've also had clients that ask, well, how do they let you use SharePoint if you're not licensed for it? Or why can all these users use these features if they're not enabled for them or licensed for them? And it's kind of like, well, go back to on-prem. Did Microsoft ever limit how many mailboxes you could create in Exchange Online based on CALs, or limit the amount of users that could access SharePoint based on user CALs for SharePoint? This has kind of always been Microsoft's stance is, in certain products, there's exceptions, but most of the time, it's on you to make sure you're truing up, you have the right amount of CALs, you have the proper licenses. I mean, even SharePoint going from standard to enterprise, all you had to do was put in a key to bump it up, and then you had to go buy a bunch of user CALs and all of that if you wanted to actually true up. But this has kind of always been Microsoft's stance with their enterprise products around, you have to make sure you have the proper amount of licenses for all the users that are leveraging said features, products, services, etc., both on-prem and in the cloud.
I just want to be kind of clear. I don't think this is, you know, one of those somebody is kind of out to get you kind of scenarios. This is just calling out that, hey, you know, this is something that you want to think about along the way as you implement your tenancy and you start to light up features and get them to where they need to be. Because I think over time, what really has to happen here, or not has to happen, but probably realistically will happen, is you see a lot of services that come out and they don't always have the administrative controls in place when they first come out. And then Microsoft builds out that administrative framework, that governance framework along the way. At some point, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these product teams have to come back and actually adhere to their licensing or figure out ways to make them all scoped and a little bit more hardcore so that you are adhering to the licensing you purchase. So I think just by following some of the licensing guidance that's out there and documented today, it puts you in a better place for future state.
Yep, completely agree. And they even call that out at the top of the article here, where they make the comment essentially that there could be a point in time where targeting capabilities for some of these services aren't available. And if you don't limit this properly right now, one day you may wake up and half your users can't access a certain feature because you didn't realize that was a tenant level feature. And all of a sudden that those targeting capabilities from an admin perspective were made available on the back end and users just lost access to it. Again, whether you do it intentionally or unintentionally, like you said, it could change at any time because Microsoft is always rolling out new features, new capabilities, new management, functionality, all that stuff.
Yeah. You got to set yourself up for success. So some of this, I think, goes back to let's play in the plan and kind of work it as it goes through. And if I was maybe in a consultancy or, you know, I was in the business of implementing Office 365 or M365 tenancies for customers, I would probably add something like the guidance that's in this article just to my checklist, because it's more time and effort. It's not wasted time or wasted effort, but it's more time and effort that needs to go into your upfront implementation. And then again, don't lose sight that you've got to operate these services, right? It's just not Microsoft keeping the lights on. It's you making sure that, you know, you have ongoing compliance along the way. And there's always going to be overhead with that.
No, this is absolutely going into my checklist because, like I said, I had not seen this article before. It's buried a few levels down under the service descriptions. And I knew some of these, but I did not have the full extent that this article gives me on how to manage these tenant level services.
I think another great thing about this article, outside of just saying, hey, here's, you know, how to scope a deployment, is it very clearly calls out which users benefit from each documented service. And really the way they call out which users benefit is what licensing is required for that. So if you've ever gone and looked at some of the eye charts for licensing, like you and I were kind of waxing poetical about some of the Azure AD licensing before we started recording this morning.
Yes.
Those can be really eye charts. Like, hey, does it have the X or the check mark where I want it? Each one of these services, like you can dive into one of these and it clearly calls out, here's the licensing that's required. The other thing that I love that this article has, which isn't always very clear in other articles about these services or even some of like the marketing or product pages for them, is each one has just this little paragraph about how do users benefit from this service. Like if you've ever looked for like the elevator pitch for Azure Active Directory Identity Protection or Office 365 Customer Key or OME, Message Encryption, there's just a little sentence, like 2, 3, 4 sentences, whatever it is, that clearly spells out the business benefit of each one of those services, which I think is really great as well, because that really doesn't exist in some other places.
It is. So, interesting thing. Did you flip through this and look at the licensing for all of these?
For most of them, yes. Did I miss one?
For all, no, but all but two of them, it's essentially E5 features.
Yeah.
DLP and AIP are E3. All these other tenant level services are essentially E5 services.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic, but sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit.
So the moral of the story, if you want all your users to be in compliance, just go buy E5 for everybody.
Well, remember, friends, only friends. Yeah, that was another conversation.
No, that was fun. That's business, not E5.
All right.
Friends absolutely let friends buy E5, especially when they're buying from Ben.
Okay, good. Yeah, duly noted.
Yeah, okay. Had to make that clarity that I will absolutely let all of my friends buy E5, especially Microsoft E5. Because some of these are EMS E5s, some of them, most of them are EMS E5, some are O365 E5. But yes, most of them are falling at E5 SKU. So with that, we should probably wrap up this recording because I have a meeting and you probably have work to do.
Yeah, probably work, right? Let's get to it.
Work. Yes, absolutely. Well, thanks. It was good to talk to you again after our extended vacations and time away. And enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, Ben. Thanks.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.